Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello. Esther and I are still away in sunny Wales, so instead of the usual podcast, this week we're going to have a special edition of what we call Desert Island Crisps. As many of you already know, these interviews I do with celebrities in which I talk to them about their life through the medium of food. They choose eight edibles that have charted the course of their life, and we eat them and we chat in my kitchen in North London. It's all very jolly. In this episode, I am joined by the MasterChef judge, the Guardian restaurant critic, and the author of Hungry, Grace Dent. We're recording this so that people know in my home.
We are.
Because you were up for coming into the studio, but social distancing, well, that means we can't. And I've suddenly realised.
We are actually pretty socially distanced, though.
We're 2 metres. This is 2 metres.
Officially socially distanced.
We're 2 metres apart. We're in my home, which is designated as a studio for the purposes of work. So yes. You're allowed to come round. And I have realised that.
But we are a vital service.
We are. We are key workers.
We are. If people couldn't hear this light banter, what would the state of the nation be?
Well, it's only light banter at the start. We're going to delve deep into your deprived, sad, awful, terrible, lonely childhood in Cumbria. No, your lovely and fun and exciting childhood in Cumbria. And the food you ate when you were a kid, and then coming to London, and all this kind of stuff. And then being a restaurant critic. But one of the few restaurant critics like me who's done it for two papers?
Well... Yeah,
Standard, Guardian.
Evening Standard, and then the Guardian. I was at the Guardian for quite a few years, and they weren't really paying me very much money. So then I went across to work for the Evening Standard under Evgeny.
Yeah,
and they weirdly had more money.
Yeah, and then they ran
rinsed them of all their money, and then went back to the Guardian. No, I always wanted to go back and be a national restaurant critic. I think I wanted. It was always important to me to be able to go back up north and go to Manchester and Liverpool and Leeds and places like that. I mean, the actual reality of that can be a bit of a slog. You know what it's like.
I know. Well, I don't, because I don't really bother to go. I really do though.
I know.
But then I bet you get complaints from all your readers that she doesn't leave London enough.
What I've found is that the amount of times you leave London makes no impact to the criticism that you're not leaving London. It makes none. It's a weird one, because readers feel very passionate that you should be leaving London. But then when I take 2 or 3 days, usually coming from London, go to Leeds, review some restaurants, go across to Manchester, and when you start to write them up, you press send and you get so far fewer people reading it. People want to hear about London. I'm not telling you anything here that people also want to admit. Nobody wants to.
I know this is to be true, because I've had it all my life. And I know that Marina O'Loughlin on the Sunday Times has this, and they endlessly complain, and she goes quite a lot. And I really don't. I mean, I really mostly just stay in London. I get only the same level of complaints. And then if I decide, right, this has got to stop, and I do 4 or 5 in a row in the north or something, because once I've gone there, I'll do a few. They don't even notice. They still say it.
It's interesting that when people say you never leave London, what they actually mean is you didn't come to a restaurant right near my house. So they don't they don't care that you've been to Cornwall. If they live in Leeds, they don't care that you were in Cornwall. All they say is you haven't been to the restaurant.
But if you go to the whole point is
the road.
But Grace, if you then go to Leeds,
yes,
but you don't go to their favourite place,
yes,
they say you came all the way to Leeds, and you didn't come to Auntie Hannah's Tiffin Tin or whatever around the corner from mine.
I find is that when I do go to wherever, Leeds, Liverpool, wherever, then the comments become people from that place being cross at how far I've said that things are. So just say, I say, this restaurant is 1.6 miles from the town centre, right? And then I go on to write 850 words about the restaurant. There'll be 300 comments from people saying, well, she should have took the slip road. And it's like, clearly she went down that the wrong one-way system. And so
that's the classic blokes in a pub,
yeah,
who never actually get to, they never actually get on to talk about the football that they'd all gathered to meet for, because they go, oh, you took the B3078, you want us to take the A709 and come off at the Dingley roundabout.
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, travelling around Britain at the moment is utterly miserable. Like, you can't complain about being a restaurant critic ever, because it's the greatest job in the world. And when you complain, people's eyes start to roll. It's like complaining about being Princess
Margaret. You can
complain
Margaret. To me, love.
I can complain to you. I really do want to be out around London, around the Britain at the moment. But God, travelling is weird.
It's a terrible thing. And then MasterChef is back as well. Let's move on to that.
For the purpose of radio, the noise I made then thinking about COVID was I'm really looking forward to next year, and I'm hoping we're going to move into a new state of just joy and normality. That's where I am in my head.
I hope so too. I think the fact that we all had this glimpse, and as restaurant critics, you know, particularly, but as consumers of food and as restaurant goers, that they did you find once they let us out, I went to more restaurants than I had been before,
yes,
and it became an even more integral part of my life. And
yeah.
There's that bit where it's on Thursday and you can't think, what, you know, you don't want to cook, and you can actually just go, oh, let's all just go out for a pizza. That's all it was, and for it to.
Do you know what I miss? I miss going to a pub with smelly floors and not enough bar staff, and getting jostled around at pub bar trying to get served and not getting served. These things that I hated, right?
Mm.
But I just want to do it. I just want to be in a stinky pub and I want to order those glasses of wine where they get it from a bottle with like a sticky top. You want
a really, really bad gin and tonic in a Durelex glass with no ice, with an old bit of bent lemon and the last bit of tonic in the bottle that isn't even fizzy. I'm worried that after the lockdown, we'll go back to, when it all goes back to normal, you'll go into a pub and sit down at a table and wave your hand expecting to be brought to pint. And they have to go back to 1,000 years of, where do you think you are, man?
Yeah, well, I assume that you just behave like that anyway in pubs.
I'm too far too posh.
You are posh.
No, I'm not posh.
You are quite posh. I say this all the time when I meet the other restaurant critics. I think that, this is why my book, Hungry, must have been like an absolute education for you. I mean, I don't think, did you realise that there was so far up north that you could go? I mean,
it's true.
This is
you
the
did
top
go
of the M6, like just before you get into Scotland.
You really did go up to the bit with the Bobby pictures of dragons and stuff, but and it goes on after that. I've got a map on the wall which actually stops before that. I don't know if people have gone there. It's you do things like go south to Manchester, don't you?
I mean, Manchester.
Even York.
Manchester is pretty south.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well,
I mean, it is.
I've got to say, look, talking about the food, though, that's on your list of things, there is no, I don't believe, if you're children of the 70s and 80s like us, then in regard, and when I'm told I'm posh, I never know quite where to go with it.
I love it. I love how flustered you've become just by me saying that you're
on
posh. Sitwell, on the other hand.
And he's posh.
Now,
he
William
he
Sitwell, on the other hand, just looks at me and says, of course I'm posh, Grace.
Yes, but like, Sitwell.
I'm ruling
class. He grew
class.
Up in a stately home. He grew up in a stately home and part of it, and his father was called Sir Cheverell, or one of the other ones was called it. I mean, I've got to say, I'm a second-generation immigrant Jew who did go to public school in Oxford, it's true.
You went to public school and then you went to Oxford.
But what I was going to say is that regardless of your social class, if you ate, today it might be different. In the 70s and 80s, we all ate the same food.
I think that with regards to the food that I talk about in the book, I talk about all these lovely things because they do bring back this warm nostalgia. They take you back to points in the 70s and the 80s, of growing up. Often when we had far less, far fewer things that we could buy in the shops. So they were amazing. However, yes, I did write Hungry from a working class northern perspective, but you're right. What has continually surprised me is when you talk to someone like Tom Parker Bowles, who is from, you know, was around royalty, you know, people ate the same thing. So I do, I do agree that the middle classes and the upper classes were just as fond of a mini roll.
Yes, no, well, they are, which is your first food. And I think we should all tuck into one. But this is a misconception that you people have.
Yes.
That we're so different. There is, in the same way that unquestionably the upper classes don't understand the working classes and the middle classes don't understand anybody, it is reciprocal. Working class people think that upper class people are sitting around eating capons and swans all the time. And they're really not. They're eating mini rolls. And if you've got mini rolls, you've got Angel Delight coming up, spicy knickknacks. I mean, I've got to say that at number five, I didn't know you could get tinned mac cheese, but
ooh,
there you go.
Right, so...
tell me about the mini rolls. Where does this take you back to?
First of all, so what we're holding is a Cadbury's individually wrapped mini roll. Now, these are already... they're annoying me just to look at them in a way, because these used to be wrapped in gorgeous gold foil. Do you remember?
I do. And because
it was. Because it was gold foil, you could smell them immediately. And they, to me...
Now it just smells faintly of condoms.
Well, I just don't understand why you would take away something that was so beautiful and felt so much like a birthday party when you were in the 70s or the 80s, when there was a little stack of them, you know. And I just feel... Why would you put these purple wrappers when it's not even the proper Cadbury's purple? Sorry, but
no, you're right. I'm
feeling a little bit. There's something about my childhood that was taken away when they took away the fact. I mean, these wouldn't look good on a buffet, whereas the working classes would have put these on a buffet. That's the difference between me and you. I bet you just had these as snacks every given day. I only got these on my birthday.
Rubbish.
There you go. It's it's really interesting because there is these marked differences. And to me, I remember when I left, I was born in Aldershot because my dad was in the army. And we left Aldershot really...
So that to me sounds really posh.
Well, we went to Carlisle after that. And on my last day of nursery school, I took a goodbye present and I took a load of a big box of mini rolls and we all had one. So to me, mini rolls. I need to open one.
You did say you wrote tin foil wrapped mini rolls, but obviously you can't get them anymore.
Mm. I say in the book that.
No, it's really good though. It's not a horrid thing. It's like if you ate a posh chocolate sponge in quite a posh restaurant, posh restaurant, not a French one, you'd get something not unlike that.
I think that Cadbury's purple, for a lot of people, is just almost synonymous with it's love. Cadbury's purple is love. It's happiness. It's excitement. For me, Cadbury's purple is Easter, when I was a child and getting an Easter egg, or getting taken to the Naffy, the army shop, and getting some Cadbury's buttons. So even just looking at the Cadbury's purple.
So did you live in on the accommodation when you were growing up?
Yeah, just until I was three. And then my dad came out of the REMI and we...
What's that?
The Royal Electrical and Mechanics something and engineers. I really will have to look that up whenever I get asked. That's the top of my head. I can't remember.
It doesn't matter. It's fine. It's your childhood. Mm-hmm. You know, you can choose to know nothing about it.
I know. I'm enjoying this so much.
No, I'm glad you're enjoying it. That's the whole point. Well, you see, you're very right about the tinfoil. I feel the same thing about crunchies, which A, were orange, not gold when we were kids, and they were wrapped in sort of paper. And now they put in all this plastic. And the plastic goes in the sea and kills albatrosses, whereas the foil was recyclable. It's all gone wrong.
I just think that it's... Oh, so, okay. At a birthday party when you were a child, did you have, like, birthday parties where lots of other kids would come to the house and you would have like a cheese and pineapple porcupine?
Yeah, I don't know if we had a cheese. Do we have to? They certainly did. And we had Smarties, which got emptied out of tubes into a bowl to look nice. Fairy cakes, hula hoops in bowls.
Yeah.
Hula hoops were poured out into bowls to look nice. I felt that's the difference between the middle classes. I felt like the working classes and the aristocrats just ate them out of the packet because they didn't care. But the middle classes, my mum would pour them into a bowl so it looked like she made
that them. Is exactly it. And I think that's why I get on with upper class people probably more on a day to day than I do with the middle classes. Because I think the middle classes are always trying to have everything orderly and to make things better than they are. Whereas, the upper classes, they don't mind kind of, you know, a Labrador.
But there are fewer and fewer now.
Wellies in the kitchen and things like that.
But this is true. But it's also, it's a bit like the Celtic fringe. I mean, the aristocrats and the working classes now represent about 3% of the population at either end. And the middle classes is the 94% that's left in the middle.
The middle classes ruined everything.
But you lot all become, oh, but you can't pretend now that you're the, you move class. You become the restaurant critic of The Guardian, and you hang out with Tom Parker Bowles. And
but I've got silver fillings and no maths GCSE.
You've got no maths GCSE?
There you go.
That's
no,
just being
look
quick.
At the face, exactly. Look at that face. It's just
what?
Being
you
thick.
Can't, what, it's you been, failed or you didn't take thick. It? Or
well, I mean, I went to a school where if you just didn't really want to do a maths GCSE, you kind of just, nobody cared.
Well, no wonder you had to be a restaurant critic. You got no qualifications.
Nobody,
you can't, most
no
things.
No one cared at my school if you didn't really want to learn at all. We just had a pig and you could go and look after the pig.
Right. That sounds quite middle class to have
a pig. I love saying things like this to Giles. Giles, I really wish that we could just take photos of Giles' face every time I tell him a story of the working classes.
But having a pig, I mean, my children go to a really, well, one of my daughter goes to a really sort of posh independent school and they have chickens and rabbits. And that strikes me as that's what I'm paying for. That's the posh thing. You had a pig. That must, those fees must have been through the roof.
Okay. If your child comes home and says that they're not going to have a maths GCSE, they're not just not going to do it, what would you do?
I don't know at this stage because it's their only.
Would you get a tutor?
Well, not if
her?
They said they weren't going to do it.
What if they were failing
a
bit?
My daughter has got a maths tutor. And she's had one since she was six, because even though she's in private school, because she wanted to have a maths tutor.
Right. Okay.
She literally doesn't like. She doesn't like. She wouldn't play the piano or this other middle class thing.
Do you, on balance, see any correlation between your daughter asking for a maths tutor and you bringing a maths tutor in at this early age to make sure that she has?
Early, she was six.
Make sure that she has a good maths GCSE, so therefore she can apply for Oxford, right?
No, she doesn't want to. She wants to go to Cambridge. She heard that I went to Oxford, and she heard I went to Oxford and decided that Cambridge you had to be cleverer, so she wants to go to Cambridge and do maths. That's not necessarily middle class. That's a good aspiration.
Oh, Lord. Oh, I mean, my head can't live at this speed. Let's do...
I think she should, anyway. So I think my dream is that she should go to the University of Stirling. I think she should roll back a bit.
Well,
is that where you had this butterscotch angel delight? While you tell me about that,
right,
I'm going
make the butterscotch angel.
It said now look, we've got the packet of angel delight. I grew up on angel delight, butterscotch angel delight. But we were middle. You probably couldn't afford the brown sprinkles to put on the top.
There was never any brown sprinkles.
No, you bought them separately.
You bought them separately.
They were like hundreds and thousands.
Actual luxury.
they were like hundreds and thousands, but they were brown. It says Angel Delight, butterscotch flavour, made with real butter.
I bet you had a hand whisk, though.
But I had we had a thing that you wound like this.
There you go.
What did you have?
We just used a fork.
Did you? Oh, a garden fork? You just used a whippet. You just bashed it with a clog until it went into... I'm going to make this thing. Look.
I'll make it. I am only teasing you, child.
Pour 300 mils, approximately half a pint of chilled, fresh, semi-skimmed or whole milk into a bowl.
How long does it take for two
this
restaurant
five
critics?
Minutes. We'll leave it to thicken and come back and talk about the next thing.
This is two restaurant critics trying to make a sachet of Angel Delight in real time. I love butterscotch Angel Delight because it's a strange and unusual taste. It's meant to be...
Is that going to make it too posh for you, the Yeo Valley organic?
That would be lovely. That's absolutely fine. He's using some Yeo Valley.
I had one recently. My mother, or to be fair, my nanny, used to quite often, really quite often make it. And I was quite... I remember the sort of the bubbles in it, you know, and it was in a ramekin. We used to have it in a... Was it called a ramekin? It was a 1970s bowl?
I mean, when I was... it's so easy to make. And that you get so much bang for your buck with a sachet of Angel Delight.
This argument about me not being, you call me middle class, it's a bad day, because not only with the cleaner here, but that chap you see in the garden.
We're just trying to fit making it between the gardener and his cleaner. I think it's his cleaner.
Okay, let me see.
Oh, it smells like when crunchy. I get a spray tan, that's the colour that I want to be.
Smell that, it smells like a crunchy bar.
Darling, you're going to have to let it set, yeah. Or else we're just eating.
When I let it set in its own separate bowl.
So oh, bless him.
How Bill, long it says for 5 minutes?
5 minutes, but can we refrigerate it, please?
Well, yeah. We'll get to the MasterChef in proper business maybe when you arrive there in the story of your life. But it's just starting again, isn't it now? Because Monica, I've just finished filming with Monica, yeah. And she was still doing some bits and pieces for MasterChef. She said it was a bit mental with the social distancing.
Well, MasterChef was probably off, not off air, but not being filmed for, I think, probably the shortest amount of time out of all of the programmes. It got up and running, I think, within about 11 weeks, maybe, after COVID arrived. Mm. You know, they've sorted it all out. We're incredibly socially distanced. When I was filming the other day, people were walking around with just a stick that says the amount of space we're allowed to stand apart, and they just kept putting the stick between us.
And you're on 2 meters, are you? That's the BBC.
2 meters.
Let's move on to your next snack, because we haven't got it.
Oh.
You're going to say it's because my neighbourhood's too posh and I couldn't find it. It was the nice and spicy knickknacks. Now, I remember the knickknacks. Ben looked as well. I looked for spicy knickknacks. I remember knickknacks. I seem to remember there was like a scampi fries type of a flavour, a yellow packet when I was a kid.
Nice and spicy knickknacks. No, the way I always remember them, they're like it's a dark red packet. Is it not like frazzled? Have you never seen a nice and spicy knickknack? The knickknack itself.
It might be the one I'm most used to.
It's kind of a lumpy, bumpy, yeah. Corn. Maize thing, they're all different shapes, and the nice and spiciness, I would say it's like a turbo Worcester sauce with loads of, well, it'll be salty and sugary and all the goodness, you know. And it's that kind of taste where the moment you put it in your mouth, you can feel all of your gums and the back of your teeth, and it really, you know, it's a smack in the face of flavor. I mean, I don't know whether you can say this, they're not particularly good for you. I don't think there's much kind of nutrient value in one. But when I was a little girl, well, when I was about 12, 13, I went to a secondary school 6 miles outside Carlisle, and it was in the countryside. And
how did you get there?
School bus, except I used to miss it every single day. And my mother used to have to get a car out and drive me.
You surprised me because you were only half an hour late for me today.
I don't really work by earthly calendars.
No, I'm right.
No,
we have no place for you in the middle classes in that case.
That's it. I used to miss it in the morning. And anyway, so they used to, when you got to a certain point at my school, Coldew School, they would allow you the treat of being able to walk down to the shop at break time. And I used to go and have a packet of nice and spicy knickknacks. They make a good sandwich. They're very versatile. But you've never had some.
Yes, I have. Yeah. No, I remember. I just remember the packet is yellow, and I was confusing them maybe with scampi fries. I'm about 4 years older than you, 5 years older than you. So these things were all launched.
I always think you're memory. Younger than me. How have you stayed so youthful? Because you still look about 34. It's all the evil, isn't it? It's the evil. The evil.
What evil? I invite a guardian person into my house, and you've been here an hour and a half. It would have been only an hour because you were late. And you've accused me of being first middle class and now evil.
I like evil people.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Somebody for the launch of my book, they sent the best present. You know, like when you do things sometimes, they send you gifts that you'll never, ever use.
Oh, the hampers which you open up and it's various chutneys and chutneys. Teas. Which you loose leaf tea. I mean, I'm middle class. Loose leaf tea. What am I going to do with that? Compost. Boom.
And you feel very ungrateful. But somebody sent me a hamper from... It was someone a bit like Moonpig, but it was sort of something a bit like that. And they just filled this box full of treats exactly like this. It was just you opened it up and there was Frazzles and Monster Munch and salt and vinegar chipsticks. And last night I sat and watched a Dave Grohl Foo Fighters documentary and just ate the Frazzles. And it was honestly, it was the greatest thing of the whole week. Had a glass of Aldi wine.
Oh, sorry.
Giles again.
Aldi, the
Giles,
the
have you heard of Aldi? It's a supermarket.
Aldi. Aldi. Is that like the Aldi magazine for old people?
Aldi.
Yeah, but it's Aldi because they're German.
I always feel when me and you are talking that I should come with subtitles, to be honest. It's funny
about Cumbria because the last Cumbrian we had here,
who was that?
Was Hunter Davis.
Oh, I love
him. I love Hunter. He sat across the table. And what was his wine? He liked Morrison's Beaujolais?
The one that was under £4.
Yeah. So Hunter, who lives up the road here in a house, he will tell you, he bought in 1961 and it for threepence, but it's now worth billions of pounds. And Hunter is obsessed with money. And he's incredibly wealthy now, being a very successful journalist for years and years and years. But on his list was the Morrison's Beaujolais. And I found him a Fleury, like a really good,
a
25 quid thing. And he likes it, but not quite as much as the... He'd rather have had five bottles of the Morrison's.
I think that people kept saying to me when lockdown started about Aldi wine, and I poo-pooed it until I started tasting it, and it is actually really good. Their champagne's pretty good, you know.
Really?
Their champagne is good.
Like, what was the one you were drinking? What was the Aldi wine you were drinking?
It was a Fleury.
It was?
Yeah. And they're pretty good, and they're quite, yeah.
I'm sure they are. I mean, because you've got it, for cooking. So. Speaking of which, I'd like to have a glass of wine, but the only thing that we could have with it would be your fifth item, but we haven't done your fourth item. I've got up. You see, tell me about the Buckfast first, then we can get the Heinz mac and cheese in and have a glass of wine with it. Buckfast, this is what?
When I was...
This is your fourth. I want to remind my listeners that I'm talking to Grace Dent, whose book, Hungry, A Memoir of Wanting More, is wonderful and excellent and full of food. And I've been reading it all week and excited about it. And Grace, who has stopped on this whirlwind tour. It's all over Instagram. And these days, they don't let you just write a book and publish it. They make you. They flog you from pillar to post. And she's very kindly come to my house for a socially distanced Desert Island crisps, and we've had Cadbury's mini rolls, butterscotch angel delight, nice and spicy knickknacks, and now number four is Buckfast, which I've not heard of, and I'm sure this is going to expose my middle class ponziness again, isn't it?
When I was 18, I moved to Stirling and I went to uni because they were the only university that would have me. I got in through clearing.
With no GCSE maths,
and I got to Scotland. And I love Scotland. I love the place, and I always dream that I'll go back there one day and go and live. I don't even know which part, because I love all different parts of Scotland and I love the people. I think when I got there, I'm not going to say that I drank Buckfast all the time. It's got certain connotations up there.
I don't judge.
But as a student, it was the first time I'd ever really heard of it, seen it. I think I grew up right on the border of Scotland, thinking that Scotland, because I went there a few times when I was a kid, I just thought they were kind of the same as us. I was English. I thought the Scots just ate the same types of things, drank the same types of things. And then I got there and realised that they had an entire culture of stuff that I'd never even
heard
of.
What else?
Oh, God, just square sausage. different types of breads, like the way that they had their fish and chip shops, the way that they were, you know, like black puddings and white puddings. And, you know, I know that Buckfast, it might not be the greatest wine in the world, and it'll get you some very dark looks in some places if you bought a bottle. But if I was to be on a desert island and there was one thing that I could have like an endless supply of, it would be something incredibly strong like that. So you could kind of, I could, you know, make my house that I was going to live in and go and have to kill animals, which I wouldn't like to do. And then I'd just drink a bowl of Buckfast.
But we've come to a savoury thing. Now you've gone from this Buckfast, you've gone shooting up the social ladder to something very sophisticated, this macaroni cheese in creamy cheese sauce. I think you said Heinz, but Ben has managed to find one by Sainsbury's. One assumes Heinz probably make it. So I'm going to make it. What do you have?
Just stick it in a bowl microwave. And stick it in the microwave.
But can also be heated on the hob. Before heating, wait to transfer the content into a microwavable dish and cover. During heating, heat on full power for 2 minutes.
I don't think anybody has ever thought about how to make tinned macaroni cheese as much as you just did there and you in 25 seconds. I find tinned macaroni cheese... It really does have such a strange effect on people when you mention it, because some people find the idea of it absolutely disgusting. Personally, even now, with all the best restaurants at my disposal and the fact that I eat for a living...
It smells of Kraft cheese slices and it looks like ambrosia tapioca.
I cannot have a tin of this stuff in the house without eating it. If I bought a tin tonight for an emergency, I'd have eaten it within 2 days, because there's something the it's just such an effective deliverance of really cheap stinky cheese sauce and carbohydrate, and you don't have to do much with it, and you can just eat it with some toast.
Oh God, right, it smells. Would you like a glass of wine with it?
Oh yes.
Should we sort of have it as a share? I'll pour some to set the bowls and share.
I associate macaroni cheese out of a tin with moving to London, and I lived in a shared flat in Middleton Road in Bounds Green, and I used to eat a lot of tinned food. I mean, didn't everybody though, when they were in their 20s, 25, 26 years old, and I was working at Marie Claire, and the boys from Loaded were upstairs, and we all used to go out and party and drink and have fun. And
you ate this stuff. Do you want to see, like, eating
during the 90s, to be honest.
I wouldn't if this is what I've been eating. Is this to you delicious?
Needs more salt.
It does. That's exactly
this
right.
Is, you know, what this, how this, what this, this macaroni cheese is a victim of people trying to make something that can't possibly be healthy.
I'm going to put some salt in there. I'm probably saying, I would probably put this in, you've got a bit on your chin.
Okay.
That's probably how it's worn.
That's how it.
There you go. This is...
That's how we eat it in Curragh, actually.
I'd probably, if you put this in a little Le Creuset dish in the oven and grated some Gruyere over the top of it and baked it for 20 minutes, I could imagine it being edible, but...
I think
try it with the wine. The wine will go nicely. Cheers.
So what's this? What are we drinking?
It's a Pinot Gris from Alsace.
Have I changed your mind about macaroni cheese?
I'm really sad because I wanted to go. Oh, this is oh, yum! This is it's really horrid to me. I mean, I don't mean it in a bad way. No, I do. It's. I mean, it's just it doesn't have any kind.
Can
of...
you not see? Can you not even give it a right? I want you to get into character. You're starving and you've come home after a really long day of people being generally annoying.
I'd go straight for the leftover cassoulet in the fridge that I made. No? With a nice Pinot Noir.
But do you always have lovely leftovers sitting in?
Yes. I tell you what, I've got a jambalaya that I made last night. Now, the sixth thing on your list, everybody eats malt loaf. Everybody eats saurine.
Oh yeah.
I bought the saurine, and then I brought it home and opened up the cupboard, and I'm hesitating to say larder in your company because what you'll do to me, I don't know. Opened up the larder, and there was already a lot of saurine. My son eats this all the time. Hard now to find the actual loaves. You get these pre-packaged. Presumably you were thinking about an actual loaf.
I was thinking about the actual loaf, and I think that although these lunchbox sized pieces of saurine are obviously hand... Saurine? Sorin? How's saurine? Serene? It's got a double A.
Sorry.
Sorry.
I don't know. That could be
Serene?
Wrong.
Serene, well, there you go. On that bombshell.
I don't know. Casting
sorry.
They've got a Serene from up sorry. North, a Sorry from down south. But Serene. Out in the West Midlands, they say...
Sorry.
Sorry. Okay.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Farmer Ben says sorry.
I would say that...
The butter's got some sort of jam bits on it. So
I just wonder whether it loses a bit of what it is when you haven't got the full loaf that you can open and go, oh... I'll just have a little bit. And then you cut a really thick wadge of it and then you put the butter on it and then you eat it and then you think that wasn't quite enough and then you go back again and have an even bigger piece of the loaf and then you've eaten the full loaf. I think that that is the beauty of
it's
it.
It's also a packaging nightmare. The thing about cutting, what I remember from cutting, it's very hard to cut malt loaf. You know when you're impatient and you don't saw and you push the knife in and
I still buy these. I buy these... I buy this for my guy who I, whenever he's going off doing.
Do you want butter? You said you mentioned butter.
Yeah. I do like to make a good packed lunch. And I always think if you've got saurine in, you can kind of look at that's loads of butter, but who cares?
Oh, no, you've got to have loads and loads and loads. Mm. Now we know it's not bad for you.
Mmm.
Oh, my God.
There's something just really.
Mmm.
I've gone a bit When Harry Met Sally, haven't I?
I'll have what she's having. I am having
it's
what you're
just,
having.
Sorry, I'm chewing. Ever since I got down south 25 years ago, it's been like a continuous baseline in my life. It's amazing. Everybody has a little bit of a hankering for it. It's the kind of thing you can buy it anywhere. You can buy it in any... news agent, you can buy it in any supermarket, you can buy it at any motorway services. It always hits the spot. It's rich and sweet, but also salty. It's filling. I was flying out of City Airport the other day to Belfast, and there was nobody in the airport at all. This is really strange times we're living in, and I was starving. And I thought, the minute I get through security, I'm just going to try and find something to eat. And then I started to realize there's nobody at security and there's nothing open when you get into city. And there was a WH Smith's that was open. And in the fridge, they had pre-packed pieces of sorine with butter already on it. And I
buttered where? In the factory?
But it was buttered in the factory, and then the two slices placed together and then put in a packet. And I took my little packet and a bottle of Diet Coke, because when I'm sad, I'll have Diet Coke. It's just a hit of caffeine. And I just sat and looked out of the window and onto the tarmac and into the rain, and I ate myself. And it made me feel better, and it always does make you feel better. And if you put it in a packed lunch, it's not the thing that somebody's going to open up their packed lunch and go, oh, my God, winner, this is amazing. But it's surprisingly satisfying. It's the kind of thing that you should always, these pre-packed ones, have them in the bottom of your bag. You don't have a handbag. I don't know whether you have a handbag.
But I find them all over the place because my son carries them around. And so, yeah. And he takes them to football and he's in there. So any rucksack you open up, and they're often there. And you're quite right. There'll be the things, you know, in a packed lunch, whether you're a kid or a grown up, but with my kids, the bit of fruit they won't touch. If there's a Kit Kat or something in there, boom, or a Hula Hoops or that kind of a thing, they'll scoffle there. The sandwich gets left in the. In the end, as you get older, you realise it's the kind of tuna sandwich and the saurine are really
yes.
That's the great stuff.
Yeah, I think that if you know, when I'm travelling, when I'm doing restaurant work, and I often have stuff like this. In
I
the
love
front,
when you call it when I'm doing restaurant
when I'm doing
work.
Restaurant
Thank
work, I do other things, but I was when I was doing my restaurant stuff, I have packets of things like this. In the front of my suitcase, and it's just that emergency 2 o'clock in the morning, feeling sad, feeling far from home, feeling like you've been at a restaurant where you've been there for 5 hours, but you didn't really get any food, and then you went back to your room and you realized why had I bothered going to this restaurant? I didn't even like it. And I often find myself watching CNN in the middle of the night in another country and eating something like this that's at the front of my suitcase. It's really battered about.
So I realised I should ask you, I mean, it's a wonderful conversation, but the questions that I, as we I mean, you've been telling it, but as we get on in your career, if I were not a restaurant critic, I'd be asking you all those questions that people ask restaurant critics about.
But that's why I love spending time with you and all the other restaurant critics, is that we don't ask each other.
You never ask me what the best restaurant in London is. It's so liberating.
I don't ask you whether you eat all of the food when you go to the restaurant. And I don't ask, how do you become a restaurant critic? And I don't ask. It's interesting.
Or what makes you so specially qualified? But I could ask you that, Grace. What do you think makes you qualified to be a restaurant critic? What makes you a good restaurant critic? And you are one of the good restaurant critics.
I'm only qualified to be a restaurant critic because I am incredibly good at churning out thousands and thousands and thousands of words week in, week out about restaurants that make people feel by osmosis that they've been to restaurants even when they haven't been to them.
Mm.
I think that I'm quite entertaining. I've got a good eye for detail. I think that people just want to say, you know, what's Grace been up to? And that's it, really. I don't
file on time, no spelling mistakes.
Absolutely not. I don't file on time at all. And my spelling is so atrocious that at The Guardian, there's a team of people that just get together to try and work out what they think I meant a lot of the time.
Gosh, you are. You must be a much better restaurant critic than me, because my main thing is I file on time.
Yeah.
No spelling mistakes, to length. And they might as well use me because everybody else is late and badly spelled. And that's clearly the case. That's my only talent. I'm going to put something in the microwave which relates to your eighth choice. So tell me about number seven is... Well, I've written down Snapple and Otis cookies.
This is a thing that I haven't actually eaten since... You know, for quite a while. It's a Snapple is a kind of it was a 90s sensation. These pre-mixed pink grapefruit, quite cool in the 90s, like kind of soft drinks. And the Otis, how do you say it? Otis Spunkmeyer. Everywhere you say it does not sound good. The reason I chose these because these two things.
Just to say, that's the sound of the microwave just preparing our next thing.
These two things remind me of working for IPC magazines in the 90s. My first breaks in working for magazines, working at Chat magazine, working at Marie Claire, worked in this big tower. This was when magazines were absolutely... We were, you know, people that worked in magazines, we were the gods.
We were properly paid.
Everybody, it was the job everybody wanted, and... I'd come to London from the north, and I've got this job at Marie Claire, and there was this little sandwich shop underneath the little building that Marie Claire and Loaded were in. When I was at Marie Claire, my accent was so different to everybody's. Everybody was really posh, and then there was me with this kind of like weird Scouse drawl that was all over the place. So it. These two.
Was that now would be very normal. Was that
It was odd.
No. It would still be celebrated rather than sneered at even then.
No, it wasn't celebrated. Not in 1997. It wasn't celebrated. It was people thought that you were a bit of an idiot. You know, I was Marie Claire I had a degree in English, and I was writing for different women's magazines when I was at university, and then I came down and I was working for women's magazines here. And, you know, people used to just assume I never really talk about this. People used to just assume I was the secretary, and they used to come and say nicely to me, maybe I should think about going back and doing a degree. And I used to think, I've done a degree. I'm here to be a writer.
Did they assume that if you'd done a degree, your accent would have changed?
Yeah, I think they
thought. Because, I mean, I spoke like you until I went to Oxford. And then
they banged it out of you, right?
Tell me about number eight.
What is it?
Luxa by Sambal Shyok.
I think that if anything summed up London to me right now, and the things that during lockdown we've all dreamed that if we just had a house somewhere else and moved house, then everything would be okay. That's why the housing market's full of people just trying to sell and go places. And especially people that live in cities, they want to go and live in the countryside. It's going to be a huge, thousands of people run into the country. I think that this dish by Sambal Shyok sums up the type of thing that this is why London's great. This is why London is.
So this is a Malaysian restaurant on Holloway Road, so yeah. Only a mile from me.
Look, you can go and move out of London and you may have an abundance of fresh air and you'll be able to go to the local village pumpkin competition and you'll be able to have a wine cellar or whatever. But I also know that Alaxa is so much more complex than it seems. When you actually say, how am I going to make this at home? There's about 12 different things going on. This is the reason why Mandy at Sambal Sheok is, so fantastic, and what she's achieved with that shop is fantastic, because it's actually, it's a massive schlep making a laksa. It's distilling things and mincing things, and nobody of sane mind on a Friday night who's not a specialist in Malaysian food comes in and thinks, I'll just whip myself up a laksa.
What is this stuff? I don't know what that is.
Is it peanutty things or?
No, it's coconut cream.
Oh, lovely.
Now, the only thing is I would feel that this would be a really good way to sort of draw to an end of Desert Island Chris. But we have got this Angel Delight in the fridge. But I feel we've spoken about the Angel Delight enough, don't you?
Fair.
Do you think we can... I mean, yours are going to not be able to speak, are you, with all this chilli spice?
No, I mean, it's exactly on the threshold of chilli that I can eat. Because I think it's hot, but it's a chilli that attacks you then leaves. That's the best chili.
If you had to choose one of these, dishes on the desert island, you could only have one. Which would it be?
I think it'd have to be the Buckfast.
Really?
Yeah, because I think that if I was gonna have to be on a desert island, sitting there for so long, I would need an incredibly strong drink.
Proving absolutely that you can take the girl out of Carlisle. And stick her in the stick her on a desert island, but you can't take the Carlisle out of the girl. Right, Grace Dent, thank you very much for sharing with me your delicious desert island crisps.
It's been an absolute pleasure.
You've been listening to a special edition of Giles Corran Has No Idea, Desert Island Crisps. This is a Wireless Studios production produced by Ben Mitchell. And don't forget, you can listen to the podcast on the Times Radio app, and you can also subscribe to us wherever else you get your podcast. Esther and I will be back next week, and you can tune in for the live experience on my Times Radio show every Friday from 1 till 4.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.